Next step, number 657, January 7th, 2021.
Hi there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Thanks for tuning into the Next Step with Father Vodskin. We are the voice of Armadoxy, a weekly podcast started in 2008 that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're here. And if you're a regular listener, welcome back. In these weekly episodes, you will find that Father Vodskin's messages are timely, thought-provoking, and based on the solid principles of Christ's love, faith, and hope. Now, let's get ready to take the next step.
Along with the word remarkable, I think there's another word. And a couple weeks ago, we talked about the idea of remarkable. Like, you know, you got to make a remark about it. How about the word unbelievable? There are certain things that you just cannot believe. And when they happen, you go, unbelievable! That's how I'm feeling today. I don't know. Unbelievable. I know you. Some of you out there are thinking like, well, it's about time, you know. I just never thought that that could happen here in America. You know, we see it. We've watched it in different countries. We know these banana republics and everything. But all of a sudden, we see this stampede on one of the sacred institutions of American democracy, on really the longest running democracy in the world, and the right of the people. I mean, that's sacred. I've shared with you, my listeners, that, you know, in my office, I have the Declaration of Independence framed. It's a sacred document. In the course of human events, we find it inevitable that we have to break off ties. Okay, there's protests. We have to protest to see our rights. I believe in that. That there are certain unalienable rights endowed by our Creator. I believe in that. But this, just an utter lack of respect, disgrace. I mean, you know, make noise. You know, if you can go back and listen to what I've been saying through the years, and you'll find that protest is an important factor in bringing about change. And that protest cannot be a silent protest. In fact, if you remember just a few months ago during the war in Artsakh, a bunch of young people went on the Hollywood freeway, right? I think it was a Saturday evening, and they blocked the Hollywood freeway. And I thought, yeah, you know, if you're going to block a freeway, you don't do it at 4 a.m. You do it when there's traffic on there to make some noise. Yes, you have to do that. But there are certain sacred spaces. There are certain, well, let's say it this way. There are certain symbols that you can't mess with. And when you do, you've kind of like gone overboard. This is one of the problems with Hagia Sophia. You know, this beautiful shrine, Christian shrine, which the Turks took over. It's in Istanbul. They took it over. And okay, you could understand they take it over. They don't want you to have Christian services in there. So they made it into a museum. Now they made it into a mosque. And that's basically going overboard. That's the one step over. I remember in 2014 when I had a chance of a lifetime, I want to say it that way, on the 99th year after the genocide, to return back to the ancient homeland, to return back to the Armenian homeland. And I'll never forget, we were in the town of Kars. And, you know, I went through so many different places, and I saw so many Armenian churches that were just ransacked. They were basically skeletons, okay, let's say it that way. Just ruins. And you can go to and many of them, and you still feel the sacredness of it. In fact, we were in the town of Varak, And over there, it was very interesting because the old the monastery there had there were still traces of it, but the villagers in the area had taken pieces of the stones and lined their houses, had used it to fortify their houses. So you'd walk into their house and you'd see like a chachkar, a cross stone, just sitting there. You know, and you go, wow. Okay, it's okay. It's a family. There's some holiness. But in the town of Gars, that was the only place. And I can't describe what I went through. It was the only place where I could not walk into that church. It was Sırpots Arakelots, Holy Apostles in Gars. And they had converted it into a mosque. And the person who was leading our tour, he told us we're going to be going into a mosque. I just couldn't go in. I could not go in. That to me was sacrilege. It's like the utter disrespect for the church, because you're saying that that church's faith is not important enough that it can at least stand as a monument, that we now have to convert it. It's conversion, you know? And I know, you know, there's people who will say, well, you know, you should be happy that at least they're praising God in there. No, it doesn't work that way for me. For you, it doesn't work that way for me. And I'm telling you, I'm being very candid, very honest. It was a very difficult moment in that entire trip. We were there 3 weeks on both sides of Mount Ararat. It was a very famous pilgrimage that we took. It was to both sides of Mount Ararat. That's how we build it. And went through many, many destructed monuments, destructed churches. In fact, the city of Ani, the 1,001 churches, is horrendous. But I never, never felt what I felt in the town of Gars in front of that church. They told me that it had been converted to a mosque. And members of our group went in and they came back and they told me about it. And I listened, and that's fine. And it's fine. Everybody has their own tolerance level. I could not handle that. And I felt that way yesterday. Yesterday, watching these people going into this sacred area, sacred space, the capital of the United States. And you say, well, you know, it's not that sacred. It's just a political thing. And you, Father Voskin, are one of the first people who to talk about the politics and everything. That's right. But I want you to think about the sacredness of the concept. And this is what's happened, is we've chipped away at sacredness. And I'll go a little bit more. It's not just about Donald Trump. This started many, many years ago. It was the sacredness when we took away the mystery. We were talking about it with the family last night. And, you know, remember during the Obama administration, you'd find Obama in many talk shows late at night. You know, he'd go on and he'd sit with different hosts, David Letterman. You know, he'd sit there and he'd talk. And all of a sudden, the mystique of the president of the United States was he's just another guest on a talk show. Goes even farther back, Bill Clinton, I remember at his inauguration. We applauded. It was beautiful. He got up and he played the saxophone with everybody, you know, everybody clapping and cheering. It was beautiful. But it's a slow chipping away at the sacredness of the office. And this is very, I feel it because I'm a priest of the church. And I know that there is a sacredness that you can't mess with. You can't mess with. Because everybody needs that sacredness in their life. I'm not talking about a phoniness. I'm just talking about keeping things sacred. What you do privately, what you feel privately is okay. But, you know, there's a holiness. And I'll tell you when I felt this the most was in 1992. I had been a priest for 10 years. I was ordained in 1982. And the first church that I was assigned to was in Cupertino, California. And it was a small little house that had a a social hall built on it, you know, maybe a 75-person hall. And so it was like a multi-purpose room. That's more the word for it. So on Sunday mornings, it would be, we'd use it for church. During the week, there'd be meetings there. There'd be activities there. Just a big multi-purpose room. And when I got there, we said we needed to build a church. And that was one of the first things as a young priest, just out of seminary, you're very idealistic. And you say, well, do we really need the building? Especially when they talk about the numbers. You know, we're talking about $1 million. This is 1984 when we first started the building project. Okay, so you do it whatever $1 million was back then. It was a lot of money. I know, today it is too. But anyway, back then it was a lot of money. And I thought to myself, wow, we could do so much else with $1 million. And so the first couple of years, I really wondered, was it really worth it? Anyway, we got thrown into it. We did some incredible work. It was by 1988, by the will of God, we were just starting to build it when the earthquake in Armenia took place. End of 1988, we took a break for a year. We left it like just a wooden skeleton, you know, for a year, because we started collecting money for Armenia and the people there and everything. 1989, we started again to finish up this project. And end of 1989, October 17th, there was the Bay Area earthquake. It was during the World Series between the Oakland A's, San Francisco Giants. And I remember it because it was the day after we had just placed the dome on the building. And we went rushing over to the church, like, did the dome survive this massive earthquake? And it was still up there. I mean, thank God it was still up there. But it set us back because all of a sudden in the Bay Area, now we had to retrofit. There was new laws that came out because of the destruction. So two earthquakes that set us back. And finally, that building, after everything was done and said in all the delays, we finally got occupancy in 1991. And we consecrated it in 1992. And if somebody had told me that it would make a difference, I would have argued with them. But I know for a fact. I know because I was there. When we opened that church, it was a completely different game. Whereas we were a small little parish, all of a sudden, this became the hub of the community. People were coming, people were going, there was groups organizing, there were people coming and understanding that this is their church and functioning under a parish, under the dome. That space, that physical space, was something very special. It was a friend of mine who was an architect, she lent me a book at that time. I think it was called Patterns of Language, Language of Patterns. And it talked about this sacred space idea because I was so fascinated by it. Where were all these people? And all of a sudden, when you open the door, there it is. The people are there. There was a movie like that, right? What was it? Field of Dreams. And let me look. 1989, Field of Dreams. That's remarkable. It's exactly in the same time frame. Field of Dreams. It was the saying that went with that was, if you build it, he will come. The inner voice telling him. Remember that? If you build it, they will come. He will come. That's what it was. We built a church and people came. It was a sacred space. But it got me thinking about these sacred spaces. And yesterday, watching this sacred space that we called the Capitol, the center of democracy, yeah, just being ransacked. And like I said, you know, it's not something just from the last 4 years. We've opened up the doors by reality television. Yes, people like the Jerry Springers making it okay to see people in, you know, when you look at people who are on Jerry Springer, or I don't even know if the show exists. Let's go back to the last 20 years, 30 years. look at, you know, the people and the fights that they had. They were comical, you know, but they're sad, aren't they? It's truly sad that these people, this is their life, and they're fighting about things like this. And we get the enjoyment. And it's almost like wrestling. Wrestling is nothing new. You know, I know there's WWF, but that was wrestling was back when we were kids, and it was even before then. It was this act of watching people beat up each other and everything. It's all just slowly, it just chips away at what is sacred. This is one of the biggest problems that we have with war, too. Yes, it's taking place, but the sacredness of life is going away. You know, it's always amazing because you always have the pro-lifers out there talking about, you know, anti-abortion. And by virtue of their name, they talk about we are pro-life. And they're the same people that are on the front lines when somebody's getting the death penalty. Okay, now what makes life precious and sacred in utero? But, you know, when it's like 30, 40 years old, that life, what makes it eligible for death penalty? Yeah. And having people cheer on and say, yes, death to that life. Perspective, where you're at, what's happened, the circumstances. But it all chips away at the sacredness. And you have the conflict between the sacred and the profane, right? And the idea of sacred space is something that we in the Orthodox Church have always had. And it's something that in the Armenian Church, I want to say that maybe at the beginning of this year, with everything that happened yesterday here in America with our democracy, it might be just the perfect time for us to talk about the sacredness of not only of life, but of spaces, of places, of teachings. You know, we're going to have a Martin Luther King retreat. We've done it now. I think this is the 18th year we're doing that. There's a sacredness to his teaching. It's connecting this world with the God. We'll talk about it later in the show. I didn't want to bring it up now, but I'm just using it as an example right now. That there are certain things that are sacred. You go into a cemetery. You don't go dancing in there. You don't go pounding on the graves. You know that there's a sacredness. These are lives that have been lived, right? Conversely, there are places that are profane and you don't go and you don't do the sacred there. You don't go into your bathroom. You don't go, excuse me for being so graphic, but you can't go into a bathroom, into a toilet and say, okay, now I'm going to start praying. It's not the place. I know, yes, God is everywhere, but this is not the place you go to pray. It's pretty simple, isn't it? Well, the other side is true too. There are certain places that have to be sacred, that need to be sacred, that need to be sectioned off. And we've lost that. You know, like I said, you look at some of the early Jerry Springers, we started applauding people who were out of the normal. Okay, we laughed at them. You know, in the old times, we had the Beverly Hillbillies. You say, oh, these hillbillies have come. And it was kind of like they made it into a comedy, right? Now you're seeing people and you're applauding them. Yes, yes. Okay, you're over there and you have spit on everything that is sacred. Now what? And I think this is what we saw yesterday. I think we saw the culmination of many, many years of people just saying, okay, enough is enough. And we, of course, we had a catalyst too. We had a president who kind of like egged them on and said, yeah, we don't want the politicians. Okay, you don't want the politicians, but what are you doing? You know, it's like, have you ever heard people on the news comment about the media? The media is far left. The media is far right. The media is... Now, who's telling you that? The media! You listen to people, listen to talk show people. They complain about the media. Well, what are you? You're a media too. And so somebody comes and says, okay, well, you're a religious show. What are you talking about? Well, it's exactly the same kind of thing. How many times have you heard somebody come up and say, well, you know, I'm not into religion, but I follow the Bible. I go to a church that's non-denominational. We read the Bible. What? You mean reading the Bible is not religious? It's your interpretation of the Bible. You know, no, I don't interpret it. Whatever it says, that's what it is for me. Come on. You know it, and I know it, that everybody looks at that Bible through their own perspective and through their own eyes. And the way one person interprets a scripture is quite different from somebody else. And if you need the proof of that, I will show you how passages between Roman Catholic, between Orthodox, between mainstream Protestant, and between fundamental Protestant, how they could differ. Just on a simple passage. And you think about it, and the fundamentalist will say, well, I'm reading it fundamentally. I'm reading it exactly what it says. And the Orthodox will say, well, this is the way it was said. Here, look, I'm going to give you one example. I love this example, okay? I really, really love it. Just think about that, because we're going to break in. Here's your example, okay? Woman without her man is nothing. Go write that down. Woman without her man is nothing. Oh, man! People will say, what? You can't say that. Now, I'm going to tell you a secret. When they wrote the Bible in the original text, there were no punctuation marks. Did you know that? There were no punctuation marks. So now, did you write that down? Don't humor me. Write it down. Woman without her man is nothing. Now, look at those words. Where you put the punctuation mark makes a lot of difference. Woman without her man, comma, is nothing, means one thing. Woman, comma, without her, comma, man is nothing. What? Woman without her, man is nothing. It's something completely different, isn't it? Same words. Same words. Oh, but I read the Bible literally. Okay, fine. Read it literally. You interpret it. And this is what I mean. The sacredness goes away when we leave it to everyone's interpretation. That's why you come back to orthodoxy. And you say, what did Jesus intend to say? Well, because the Orthodox Church has brought it to you for all these years. And yes, it has been sifted through the political climate of the Orthodox Church as well in these different countries and everything. And yes, you do have a mixture and a kneading of the dough, right? Kneading of all these terms and all of these feelings. And you come out with something. But the sacredness is what was missing yesterday. Of course, if you're somewhere under a stone and don't know all that happened here in America, we had an election in November. A new president was elected. The incumbent president said that it was fraud. He said that it wasn't right. And what he did is he took the joke to a different level, to a point where he got people believing in it. So much so that they took to the streets, and he went ahead and he incited people to get up and protest to a point where they destroyed the sacred space of democracy, namely the Capitol building in Washington, D.C. I start off the new year with this story. I'm going to share with you in the second portion some other interesting facts which are disturbing to me, but I think you'll find it interesting in the factual case. We take a break every week just to play a song and kind of like give you a little bit of time to stretch out, kind of like figure what was said, play with it a little bit, and relax. This is what I picked out for this week.
Many's the time I've been mistaken, and many times confused. Yes, and I've often felt forsaken, and certainly misused. Oh, but I'm all right, I'm all right, just weary to my bones. Still, you don't expect to be bright and bon vivant so far away from home. So far away from home. I don't know a soul who's not been battered. I don't have a friend who feels at ease. I don't know a dream that's not been shattered or driven to its knees. Oh, but it's all right, it's all right, for we lived so well so long. Still, when I think of the road we're traveling on, I wonder what's gone wrong. I can't help it, I wonder what's gone wrong. And I dreamed I was dying. I dreamed that my soul rose unexpectedly. Looking back down at me, smiled reassuringly, and I dreamed I was flying. And high up above, my eyes could clearly see the Statue of Liberty sailing away to sea, and I dreamed I was flying. Well, we come on the ship they call the Mayflower. We come on the ship that sails the moon. We come in the ages most uncertain hours and sing an American tune. Oh, and it's all right. It's all right, it's all right. You can't be forever. Tomorrow's gonna be another working day, and I'm trying to get some rest. That's all I'm trying, get some rest.
Paul Simon doing American Tune, which is not necessarily an American tune as much as it is, well, Johann Sebastian Bach's tune. With Paul Simon's words, it becomes an American tune. This was written back in 1973, you know, when we also had, and we were talking about like the slow degeneration of the sacred. We had issues with Vietnam. We had a presidency, the Nixon presidency, and Watergate was, I think, unfolding at this time, and he resigned back in 74. There's all kinds of stuff going on. In fact, I remember, let me see if we could bring that up. Yeah, in 2019, last year, wow, this was written back in 4th of July. Let me just read this. It's interesting. It begins as a hymn to brokenness and dream betrayed. Paul Simon's American tune glimpses a nation where promise has turned to sacrilege and a man is many times confused. Released in 73, okay, yeah, with President Nixon plotting in the White House and the Vietnam War still 2 years from its ignominious end, the song is a lament to a country that has lost its way and a sobering recognition that you can't be forever blessed. Wow. I got more than I bargained for. Anyway, I'll put a link to this. This was from Los Angeles Times. I remember reading this last year. Interesting, yeah. Anyway, I will put a link on today's show notes. You could read a little bit more, but I just felt like this is the song I wanted to start off the year with because, you know, it is America. It is, there is something sacred about it, about a place where you can be, you can live up to your potential, a place where, yeah, despite all the difficulties and imperfections, there are opportunities to perfect those imperfections. And the minute you stop those opportunities, that's when you get back into, sadly, into the profane. Just like in the church, there's a place where you go and you leave the profane, you leave the secular life outside. You walk in and you light your candle, you say your prayer, you get filled up with the incense, with the spirituality. In the same way, there are sacred spaces within governments, particularly where laws and legislatures come together. You know, and you could, I think it's a generational issue, probably. I grew up in a time where, you know, people fought for these rights, and these were inalienable civil rights, and we grew up with Dr. King's speeches. We grew up with stories of Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. If you haven't seen that movie, that's probably out of the 50s, maybe possibly the 40s. Check that out. You know, it tells you what America can be and should be, and the disappointments that he felt. Jimmy Stewart movie. Anyway, we're going all over the place, aren't we? It is the beginning of the year when we played American Tune by Paul Simon. I hope you enjoyed it.
Look what they done to my song, Ma. Look what they done to my song. Well, it's the only thing that I could do half right, and it's turning out all wrong.
Now, this second portion of today's show was not intended. I did not want to go this way, but I have to. I have to. I really thought that this has been resolved. I thought that people knew about this, but I am, like, shocked at the number of people who are in prominent positions, too, who don't know the basics of the dates of Christmas. And just today happens to be January 7th, which in our church is called Meredos. So on the five major feast days, let's go through them, okay? Yeah, this next portion is going to be like a kind of like an adult Sunday school, okay? So if you feel like fast forwarding, getting rid of it, you can. But it is a Sunday school lesson because I'm just shocked. I'm just shocked that people today on January 7th are talking about, yeah, well, the Armenians and the Russians and the Armenians and the Orthodox, we celebrate Epiphany and everything. And they're just like scrambling it all together. Yesterday, January 6th. Today, the Armenians and the Orthodox are doing this. Today, the Orthodox and the Armenians. Oh, no, 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 no. Let's slow down a bit, okay? Today, January 7th in our church is Merelot. On the five major feast days, that today happens to be one of them, is the Nativity. The second major feast day is the Resurrection or Easter. The third one is Transfiguration, which is usually in July. The next one in August is the Assumption of the Holy Astvadzadzin, or Theotokos, or the Mother of God. And the fifth one is the Exaltation of the Holy Cross. And on the following days, the following day, which is Monday, except for this one, this one is the following day, January 7th. And so it's movable as to the day of the week, whereas all the other ones are on Mondays because the major feast is on a Sunday. So the following day is called Merelot or Memorial Day. And the reasoning is because we include everybody in that celebration. But just today, His Holiness, the Catholicos Karakin II, did a memorial on Merelot for the children, for the young men who gave their lives and sacrificed their lives. And he talked about intercessory prayer. I'm going to put a link on today's show notes. Please check that out, that video, because he talks about that, about the need for us to reach out to the people who have passed away and not treat them as people who have gone away, but people who are part of our lives today. It's fascinating when you think about the continuity of life and you talk and you think about the reality of, does life end at the grave? No, it doesn't for us. The reality, it's very real for us that life continues. And that's what was pronounced from what I heard from the Catholicos, and I'll let you make your decision. It is beautifully phrased, let's say it that way. So every following day of the major feast day happens to be Merelot. So today is January 7th, and if you know anything, you know that the Russians celebrate, Christmas on January 7th. So all of a sudden now, people are philosophizing, they're prophesizing, as in professorizing, okay? Not in prophet, but professorizing. Like they're getting up there and they're on their pulpits and talking, this is Epiphany and this is, no, slow down. Today is not Christmas, it's not Epiphany, it's the same feast. Look. December 25th was a made-up Christmas day. Why? Because there were worshipers of the sun god, S-U-N, sun. And Constantine, what he wanted to do was switch over and have the S-O-N, sun, be revered and make the celebration of the birth of the S-O-N, Son of God, be the prominent religious holiday. So he said, since we're celebrating the birth of the S-U-N, Son, and this only works, of course, in English language, confusion between sun, the astronomical star that's up there, and the Son of God. But it works for us in the English language. So anyway, Constantine changed the date in the 4th century to December 25th because there's 12 days. And it took pilgrims 12 days to go from Bethlehem to the River Jordan, and he separated the nativity from the baptism, which was the original way that both of these feasts were celebrated on January 6th. In Armenia, they never switched it over. We had pagans. We didn't have the same kind of pagans. So there was no need to switch it over. We kept the date January 6th for nativity and baptism, okay? December 25th, January 6th. Those are the two differences. Now, on top of that, there is the old calendar. Julian versus Gregorian calendar. And the Russians are on the old calendar, which is 13 days off of the new calendar. When they celebrate Christmas on January 7th, what they're doing is they're celebrating the December 25th day, 13 days off. So they are celebrating the December 25th, the separated nativity on January 7th, because they're on their old calendar. And they celebrate the baptism on January 19th, 13 days off of January 6th. Now, you go into Jerusalem, the old city there where the Armenians have a patriarchate. They are on the old calendar, but because Armenians have not separated nativity and baptism, they celebrate the Theophany on January 19th. So that is nativity and baptism for the Armenians on the day that the Russian Orthodox celebrate just the baptism, January 19th. So this is what all this confusion is about. And yeah, you get your head spinning. You need to put it out. You need to figure this out. Because now we've got people who are trying to make up something. So what they get up and they say, well, it's the Epiphany. Now, where do you get the word Epiphany? Well, if you get a calendar from any store, you'll see that it says Epiphany. Epiphany means revelation, you know, revelation. And so at the baptism of Christ, you have the revelation of God the Father saying, this is my beloved, the Son, God the Son, being baptized, and the Holy Spirit descending upon the Son of God. And so you have this revelation. And the common name for this is Epiphany in the West. We, again, only the Armenians, no Russians, nobody else, only the Armenians celebrate January 6th, or if you're on the old calendar, that would be January 19th. We celebrate the nativity and the baptism together like it originally was, and we refer to that not as Epiphany, but as Theophany. Theo means God, the revelation of God. And you look in the ancient manuals of the Armenian Church, you look in the calendar of the Armenian Church, it is referred to in its proper name, not as Dzunut, Shnoravor Sur Dzunut, it is Astvadza Haidnutyun. Dzunut is nativity, Astvadz is God, Haidnutyun, revelation, Theophany, revelation of God. So January 6th is the Theophany. Very different from Epiphany. It is not just an epiphany. You can have an epiphany in your life, right? You wake up someday and you have a revelation. You say, I had an epiphany. There is only one Theophany. Theo, where God is revealed in the person of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. It takes place at the baptism when it is revealed to us, the Father God saying to us, this is my beloved Son, as he's looking on, as the Son of God is being baptized, as the Holy Spirit descends upon him in the form of a dove. So at this moment of singularity, let's call it a moment of singularity, which is like very astronomical, isn't it? They use that phrase when they talk about black holes. There's this moment of singularity. There's this point of singularity. It's just like unique, special. Just this one moment in the history of humankind where God the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit are revealed. That's why we refer to it as Astvadza Haidnutyun, Theophany. No, we do not celebrate it with the Russians. No, I'm sorry. You can bend it all you want. It's not the day. The Russians celebrate January 7th because they are on the old calendar. 13 days off of the new calendar. The old calendar was called the Julian calendar, named after Julius Caesar. The new calendar is called the Gregorian calendar. And it's interesting because it's not off by 13 years. It's off by 13 and a fraction. So I think by the year 2100, it will be off by 14 days instead of 13 days. Anyway, check it out. There's all kinds of information on the net about these two. I'll put something on the show notes today, so do check it out. But let's bring it all together, because we were talking about the sacred and the profane, and there was a lot done about this, I think, by theologians. I would say in the 1960s and the 1970s, there was all this death of God theology. There were people like Harvey Cox talking about the Feast of the Fools and the sacred and the profane, and a lot of like philosophical understanding of how these things change. And they're all now surfacing because, like I said, we had this incredible and unbelievable event which took place yesterday here in this country in a sophisticated democracy, so to speak. We brought it down to a banana republic. And what I shared with you earlier was this idea that perhaps it's not just about the time right now, but it's the chiseling away of the things that are sacred to us. And we all have to take responsibility for this. It's all around us, from the revolutions and rebellions that have said that we are a free spirit. It's almost like this had to have happened. That's interesting, isn't it? But let's bring it back to what we were talking about, these dates. Why are they important? Well, it's all part of that equation. It's about the importance of understanding that there are systems, there are rhymes. It's not just haphazardly caused. And we talk about that a lot in the next step. We talk a lot about that in Armadoxy. It's not just a matter of chance, but all of this flows together. It's a matter of finding those numbers and those sequences. And that's why it bothers me a lot of times, because there is a flow. There is a beauty. Why is mathematics so beautiful? Why is it called the language of God? Because, it flows from one place to the next. And there are certain numbers, for instance, prime numbers, which have only two factors, itself and the number one. Okay, that's the definition of a prime number, that it doesn't have any other factors except for itself and one, the number seven is a prime number. It can only be factored out by the number seven, goes into seven once, and it has another factor one, which goes into it seven times. The number 93 is a prime number. Why? Because it has two factors. The number 93, which goes into it once, and the number 1, which goes into it 93 times, right? Okay, the number 63. 63 is not prime. Why? Because it has multiple factors. It is 7 times 9, and because 9 is one of its factors, 9 goes into 63 7 times. 7 is prime, but 9 is not prime, and 9 is made up of 3 times 3. So the prime factors of 63 are 3 times 3 times 7. And there is an order to this. And it's a beautiful sequence. And you can't escape that order. So in a sense, that's the sacredness of it. And what I've been sharing with you through the years is that there is this sacred order to our lives. And they do follow in patterns and numbers. And I've shared with you that, you know, some of the basic theories of thermodynamics, which you cannot escape. To every action, there is an opposite and equal reaction. Well, that's not just a matter of physics, but it's also a matter of life experiences. You do something and there is something that comes back to you. The number 301 is etched in our minds as the year that Armenians accepted Christianity. And what are the factors of 301? Isn't it interesting that the factors of 301 is 43 times 7? 43 is a prime number of the two numbers 4 and 3, which make up a 7, 4 being the size of the earth, four sides, right? North, west, south, east, and 3 being the number of the sky, or Trinity, right? And so you have the universe in this number 43, and it is times 7, the perfection, or the number of God, which is the letter A in the Armenian alphabet. So 43 times 7 gives you the year in which Christianity was accepted by the Armenian people. By chance? I don't think so. I think it's all connected. And it's opening our minds to understanding that there is a sacred balance, almost like a ballet, right? Think about it. You've got the Philharmonic that is playing this beautiful ballet, and the violin bows go up and down, and you have the timpanis pounding, and you've got this delicate ballerina who is now dancing to these tunes on the tip of his or her toes. And it just all comes together. And that sacredness, that beauty, is in that sacredness. And that's what I want to share with you. That's what I tell you about Armadoxy. It's not just circumstance. It's not happenstance. It's not just by accident. But there is a design to it. And once you start finding it, you know, all of those things that they made into science fiction or fiction in the last 10, 20 years, things like the Da Vinci Code of finding codes, you don't need to find those codes. They're already right in front of you. It's just a matter of living out that faith. So, as I mentioned earlier, I did not want to go this way, but life took it. I just couldn't take it anymore. But there are some serious things that I do need to think about, and this is really like the bottom. It's almost like you need to build on something that is concrete. And so let's start building, you know, a faith that has that respect for the sacredness. It's very, very important. What I'm going to share with you after Susie makes her announcements is something, a direction that we're going to be going in as In His Shoes. And it was because of a wake-up call that I got just a couple weeks ago before the New Year hit. Right now, here's Susie. Of course, the piano player's here. Here's Susie. See? It just flows.
Susie here again, popping in to say thank you to you, our listeners. We are thankful for your prayers, kind expressions, and donations. You make this podcast possible. Your listenership and support has allowed us to grow and expand our ministry around the globe. We are grateful to be able to touch so many lives and create lasting friendships. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world and look forward to your continued support. Thank you, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement, and thank you to all of you, our listeners, everyone, for all of your comments, your prayers, your support for this ministry. Something happened that really touched me and moved me and is going to be altering the way we look at things. Something happened over the holidays, and that was, as you know, we have our toy drive, and I have to tell you that it was over and above what we expected. It was just a fantastic drive, considering that it was after a war that had consumed us and all of our resources, so to speak. And the response that we had to the toy drive, not only to the local one that aided children of domestic violence, but also to the children in war-torn Armenia, Artsakh, the families who've been displaced by war. And we made an incredible donation. We had so many people donating, and I just have to tell you, thank you. There's no way of looking at it. It was beyond what we even expected, closely expected. And hundreds of people were affected, hundreds of children. And but what happened was I was speaking with a priest in Armenia, someone who was going to help me get the toys, and he did, and, you know, making the contacts. But he told me, he said, it's awkward for us to be giving the toys because we're finding people that haven't eaten. They don't have food. And so it's this awkwardness of taking the toys and saying, here's some toys for you, when the family hasn't eaten. They don't have the basic necessities after a war. And it was like almost like a slap in the face that, what are we doing, you know? And I can reconcile with it because I understand that we also have to bring a little bit of flavor to these kids' lives. It just cannot be all black and white. Even in the church, we bless what? The water and the bread in a home blessing. At the beginning of the year, we bless water for spiritual needs, bread for the physical needs, and we also bless salt so that people have flavor in their lives. It's an essential part of life that you have some flavor. And so, yes, I don't regret sending those toys over. Everybody needs a little bit of sunshine. Everybody needs a little bit of hope in the midst of all this negativity and darkness. And certainly those children who did not ask for any of the politics that were being played, these children needed a little bit of laughter. We did it, okay, and we're done. But right now I realize that as In His Shoes, as a group that has been focused in on walking in the shoes of others, we have a unique position and a place that we have to play out. In other words, we have walked with people who have gone through difficulties. And we really have, inside the Armenian community, you don't have anybody. Despite what they tell you, you don't have anybody who cares about anything else beyond themselves. In His Shoes made it very clear that because we have gone through genocide, we have an obligation to be up front with others. We have to be standing with others. We have to be walking with others, walking in their shoes. And the entire philosophy is about standing with others. And so we went out to Standing Rock and stood there with the Native Americans. We went there and we stood in protest with the Darfuris. We went out there in Rwanda, and so on and so on. And all of our stories are like this. And we now have this opportunity to share that message with a larger group of people, because we know what's happening in Armenia. It is genocide. Let's not fool ourselves. What happened between September and November, those 45 days, is not just, you know, the Azeris saying, hey, you guys are in our land. It's about this program of annihilation. Their target is Armenia and the Armenians. And yes, I know genocide has its rules, has its conventions, but all sense and all intent and purposes is to annihilate a people. And the Turks have their eyes on Armenia, and we cannot sit by and just talk about, let's take toys over there, let's take food over there. That's important. That's humanitarian. But we also have to get on the higher level. And that's politics. But we know politics don't work, right? What happened? Where was the world politically? Nobody cared about Armenians. But we do have another way. We as the church have the power of Christ. And I'm going to read to you a sentence that was given to us by the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. He said, "I would urge you to give priority to the search for God. Allow His Spirit to permeate your being. If you do not have a deep and patient faith in God, you will be powerless to face the delays, disappointments, and vicissitudes that inevitably come." Dr. King, for me, is one of those people that was able to take faith and really bring about change. And yes, his dream was cut short because of an assassin's bullet. But if you buy into the dream, you need to take that dream forward. And we've been doing that since 2004. We've had an annual Martin Luther King Jr. retreat. And this year is no different, except this year is going to be virtual. And that's what I wanted to invite you to. First crack, here you are, the next steppers. It's going to take place, it always takes place on the weekend of the Martin Luther King holiday here in America. That happens to be on the third Monday of January. This year, it'll be January 18th. A few years back, we had it on the day that Obama was inaugurated. It happened to be on January 20th. This is one of those movable dates. It goes on the third Monday of the month. And that was a very emotional one. I'll never forget that retreat. But this one is going to be very special. We're going to do it virtually. It's 3 days. It takes place Saturday, Sunday, and Monday morning. It begins Saturday morning with a small half-hour little presentation and the lesson. Sunday morning with a half hour presentation. Monday morning with a half an hour presentation and lesson. You basically listen to this and you take yourself, you virtually, by following along in these lessons. Then you join us on the holiday itself, January 18th at 7 o'clock. Now, this is the only one. If you're going to do it live, you have to be there 7 o'clock Pacific time. And I know that's a little bit difficult for many, especially our European listeners, because it's like middle of the night or early morning. But whatever, that's the only one that you're going to have to kind of adjust your timing on. And I know our South American people, I know that's going to be a little difficult there too. Although they like to, we've been there and I know they have their dinner at 11 at night, so I shouldn't say it's difficult. Let them tell me it's difficult, right? Okay, so what you need to do is sign up for this, and it's very easy. You drop me an email. You have my email address, or you could drop it at fv@wdacna.com. Or you can do it just to me or at feedback@epostle.net and just say you want to register. It's going to be a virtual event. You do it from the comfort of your home, but it will be looking at the prayer life of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. In other words, the prayers that moved him, that moved the man who moved us. It's going to be very special. It's special for me. We're going to be using as the text the book called Thou, Dear God, Prayers That Open the Heart and Spirit by the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Now this, I will put a link on today's show notes to that book. It is out of print, so it's really basically first come, first serve. But those of you who are going to be in the sessions, you will be given some material to be looking at, and we'll be sharing it on the lessons that I give. So if you want to sign up for the Martin Luther King Jr. Retreat, sponsored by In His Shoes, drop me a line, okay? We'll put a link on today's show notes with all of the information. Drop me a line. I'd love to have you there. And it's going to be a very special time, not only for the people who participate, but especially for me as the retreat leader, because every year it's a very spiritually filled opportunity for us to look deep into somebody who should be admired. He took faith and he applied it in his life, and he never went away astray from the essence of that faith, that love is the highest ideal by which you can bring about change in this world. That again is January 16th, 17th, and 18th. I'm going to call it a day. I hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. Do look us up on social media and all the usual spots and the mothership inhisshoes.org. On behalf of the wonderful team who put today's show together, Susie, our producer, Ken, our technical director, we wish you a happy new year, the blessings of the Christ child with you always. This is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Anything else?
Jesus is the reason of the season.
Yeah, Jesus is the reason of the season?
Yeah.
That's a good quote.